A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been staring at the economic map of Europe, and something's not sitting right. The story everyone tells is Germany, hard-working industrial powerhouse. Greece and Portugal, sunny places where people prioritize siestas over spreadsheets. Warmer climate, lower productivity, case closed. He wants to know whether that correlation actually holds up in the data, or whether we're just cherry-picking a few countries and calling it a pattern. Is the warm climate equals lazy stereotype anything more than a mental shortcut?
And the shortcut is seductive, right? You picture a Greek island, someone's having a long lunch by the water, and your brain just fills in the rest, versus a German factory floor with robots and clipboards. The mental imagery does half the work before any number shows up.
So, let's bring the numbers in. Because the very first data point flips the whole thing on its head.
It really does. And we need to define two things before we go anywhere because they get muddled constantly. GDP per capita is total economic output divided by population. That's your broad prosperity measure. Labor productivity is output per hour worked. That's efficiency. They tell different stories, and the confusion between them is where most of the bad takes live.
So give us the headline numbers. What's the gap we're actually looking at?
Germany's GDP per capita at purchasing power parity, 2025 estimates, is around $66,000. Greece is about $39,000. Portugal, around $45,000. So there's a real gap. We're not denying the gap exists. The question is whether it's about effort or structure.
And the effort question is where it gets uncomfortable for anyone who's been repeating the lazy southerner line.
OECD data from 2024. Average annual hours worked per worker. Greece, 1,886 hours. Portugal, 1,803. Germany, 1,343.
Wait, so the Greeks are working 543 more hours a year than the Germans?
That's 13.5 extra full-time weeks. More than 3 months of additional labor. The country that's supposedly napping through the afternoon is putting in the longest work year in the European Union.
That's not a small inversion. That's the entire mental model collapsing on contact with the first row of a spreadsheet.
And Portugal's not far behind. Southern Europe works more hours, not fewer. The stereotype isn't just wrong, it's backwards.
So if they're working more, why is output lower? That's the real question.
Productivity per hour. Germany produces roughly $68 of output per hour worked. Portugal's at about $38. Greece is around 33. German workers produce more than double per hour what Greek workers produce. Same hour, same effort, vastly different output.
And that mechanism, output per hour, is where the whole climate explanation runs into a wall. Because if heat were the main driver, you'd expect it to show up in reduced hours or reduced cognitive performance. But the hours are higher, and the temperature effect on productivity at European ranges is modest.
There's academic work on this. Heat does reduce cognitive and physical output. Nobody's arguing otherwise. But the effect size at Mediterranean summer temperatures doesn't get you anywhere near a 2x productivity gap. You're talking single-digit percentage drops in certain tasks, not having output. The climate explanation is trying to bench press a weight it can't lift.
So what can lift it? What actually explains why a German hour generates twice the value of a Greek hour?
Capital intensity is the big one. Think about what a German worker is equipped with versus a Greek worker. The German automotive engineer is sitting in a factory with millions of euros of robotics, precision tooling, and a supply chain that delivers components to the minute. The capital stock per worker in German manufacturing is enormous. The Greek worker, and here I'm thinking of the tourism sector, which is about a quarter of Greek GDP, might be serving tables or cleaning hotel rooms. The capital behind them is a building and some kitchen equipment. Same human effort, completely different capital base.
So it's not that the Greek worker is less diligent. It's that the German worker has a robot army backing them up.
That's the structural composition argument. Germany's economy is heavy on high-value manufacturing, automobiles, chemicals, industrial machinery. These are sectors where capital per worker is enormous and value add per hour is correspondingly high. Greece is dominated by tourism, shipping, and small-scale services. Shipping is actually quite productive, but it employs relatively few people. Tourism employs a lot of people and generates relatively low value per hour by the nature of the activity.
And it's seasonal. A hotel worker in Crete might be putting in 60-hour weeks for 6 months and then have very little work the other six. The annual hours number captures the total, but the structure of that labor is different from a year-round factory job in Stuttgart.
And Portugal sits in an interesting intermediate position. They've got some manufacturing, auto parts, textiles, but also a large low-productivity services sector. Since EU accession, Portugal has been on a convergence path. Productivity has grown, but from a low base. They've been climbing a hill that Germany started much further up.
Let's talk about that starting point. Because the historical path dependence here is enormous, and it gets ignored in the climate conversation.
Germany's post-war story is well known. The Wirtschaftswunder, the economic miracle. Marshall Plan funds, industrial rebuilding with the latest equipment, and an export-oriented model that was deliberately constructed. Then, in 2003, the Hartz reforms liberalized the labor market, kept wage growth moderate, and made German exports extremely competitive. It was a multi-decade, deliberate construction of a high-productivity export machine.
Meanwhile, Greece and Portugal had military dictatorships into the 1970s. Greece's junta fell in 74. Portugal's Carnation Revolution was the same year. They industrialized later, joined the European project later, and in some cases, EU structural funds actually locked in low productivity sectors rather than transforming them.
There's a painful irony there. The funds were meant to help convergence, and in some ways they did. Infrastructure improved, living standards rose, but they also created dependencies. Regions built economies around tourism and services that the funds supported, rather than developing the kind of high capital manufacturing that drives productivity numbers.
And then there's the Eurozone dimension, which is the trapdoor beneath this whole conversation.
This is where it gets structural in a way that climate can't touch. Greece and Portugal are in the Eurozone. They can't devalue their currency to regain competitiveness. Before the euro, if Greek exports were too expensive, the drachma would depreciate and make them cheaper again. That adjustment mechanism is gone. Now they have to adjust internally. Wages have to fall, prices have to fall, and that process is slower and vastly more painful than a currency move.
Germany, meanwhile, gets the opposite effect. The euro is weaker than a standalone Deutschmark would be, because it's weighted down by the less productive economies in the currency union. So German exports are artificially cheaper than they'd be otherwise. The single currency is a structural advantage for Germany, and a structural headwind for Greece.
And that's before we even get to institutional quality. Greece has an informal economy estimated at 20 to 30% of GDP. That's economic activity that's happening but not measured, not taxed, and not contributing to the official productivity figures. So the numbers we're looking at may actually understate real economic activity, though they also reflect weak institutional capacity.
R&D spending tells a similar story. Greece puts about 1.3% of GDP into research and development. Germany puts in 3.1%. Over decades, that compounds. You're building the knowledge base and the innovation capacity that feeds future productivity.
And bureaucracy. Greece has a reputation for complex administrative procedures that make it hard to start and run businesses. The World Bank's ease of doing business rankings have consistently placed Greece well below Germany. These aren't climate variables. These are institutional choices and historical legacies.
So let's take stock. We've got capital intensity, industrial composition, historical path dependence, currency regime effects, institutional quality, R&D spending gaps. All of these are structural. None of them are about how hot it's in July.
And the one variable that might actually connect to the stereotype, hours worked, points in the opposite direction. The Greeks are working more, not less. The image of the relaxed Mediterranean lifestyle, at least as measured by time spent working, is the opposite of reality.
That's the second inversion. The first was hours worked. The second is the quality of life assumption. People look at Greece and say, well, they've chosen leisure over output. But the data says they're working 13 extra weeks a year for less than half the hourly return. That's not a leisure trade-off. That's a raw deal.
It's worth noting that the hours data might actually undercount in some ways. The informal economy means some work isn't captured. Self-employed workers and family businesses, common in Southern Europe, may work hours that don't show up cleanly in the statistics. If anything, the real hours gap might be larger than what the OECD reports.
Let's go back to tourism for a moment, because it's the sector that most people picture when they think of Greece. 25% of GDP. Low productivity per worker by the nature of the work. You can only serve so many meals per hour, and there's a ceiling on how much you can charge before tourists go elsewhere. Compare that to German manufacturing at about 20% of GDP, where a single worker overseeing a CNC machine can produce enormous value in an hour.
The German manufacturing worker isn't working harder in any meaningful sense. They might be working fewer hours, in better conditions, with more capital behind them. The output difference is almost entirely about the system around the worker, not the worker themselves.
The stereotype isn't just inaccurate, it's actively misleading for policy. If you believe the problem is that Greeks don't work hard enough, you prescribe, what? Motivational seminars? The actual prescription would involve capital investment, institutional reform, and sectoral transformation. Completely different medicine.
This is where the cognitive appeal of the climate story does real damage. It's easy to picture. It confirms what people want to believe about northern virtue and southern indolence. It's a story that's been told since Montesquieu was writing about climate and national character in the 1700s. But it's wrong, and acting on it means ignoring the actual levers that might help.
The Protestant work ethic casts a long shadow. Max Weber's whole thesis was about Northern European cultural attitudes toward work and accumulation. That cultural story is so deep in the water that people don't even notice they're swimming in it.
Weber was describing a specific cultural formation in specific places at a specific time. He wasn't making a universal claim about latitude and diligence. But the simplified version, Northerners work hard, Southerners don't, has had a very long shelf life.
What about Portugal? They're in an interesting spot. GDP per capita around 45,000, productivity around $38 an hour, not as low as Greece, not as high as Germany, and they've been converging.
Portugal's story is partly about EU integration working as intended, at least in relative terms. They've attracted foreign investment, built up some manufacturing capacity, and improved infrastructure. But they started from a much lower base. In the 1960s, Portugal was one of the poorest countries in Western Europe, still largely agricultural under the Salazar dictatorship. You don't close a gap that large in a few decades.
They've had their own structural challenges. High private debt, a banking crisis, the Troika bailout in 2011. These things leave scars on productivity growth.
The bailout years were brutal for Portugal. Austerity, immigration of skilled workers, reduced public investment. All of that depresses productivity growth and recovery takes time. But they've managed it better than Greece in some respects. The political consensus around reform held together better.
Let me throw a counterfactual at you. If we swap the capital stock, gave Greece Germany's factories and industrial base, and gave Germany Greece's tourism infrastructure, what happens to the productivity numbers?
The numbers would swap, almost entirely. A German hotel worker with the same capital equipment as a Greek hotel worker produces roughly the same output per hour. A Greek factory worker with Germany's robotics and supply chains produces German-level output. The workers aren't the variable.
That's the thing that the climate narrative fundamentally misses. It attributes to individual effort and cultural disposition what's actually a story about capital, institutions, and history.
There's one more layer here that I think matters, and it's about what we're measuring. GDP per hour worked captures market output. It doesn't capture a lot of things that contribute to actual human welfare. Unpaid care work, leisure time, environmental quality, social connection. A Greek village where people work long hours in family businesses but have strong community ties might be poorer in GDP terms, but not necessarily worse off in human terms.
Though we should be careful not to romanticize that either. The data says Greeks are working more hours for less money. That's not a charming lifestyle choice. That's a constraint. People aren't choosing to work 13 extra weeks for lower pay because the olives taste better.
Fair. The point isn't that GDP is meaningless. It clearly correlates with a lot of things people care about, like health outcomes and material comfort. The point is that the productivity gap is real, but the explanation for it's structural, not cultural or climatic.
The structural explanation actually gives you a path forward. If the problem is capital intensity and institutional quality, those are things policy can address. If the problem is that warm weather makes people lazy, you're basically saying there's no solution except air conditioning.
Which, incidentally, is a real variable. As Southern Europe gets wealthier, air conditioning penetration increases, and the modest heat productivity effect shrinks further. Singapore is extremely hot and extremely productive, because they invested massively in capital, institutions, and education. Climate isn't destiny.
Singapore's a good test case. Right on the equator, GDP per capita is higher than Germany's. Productivity is excellent. If climate were the driver, Singapore should be one of the least productive places on Earth. Instead, it's one of the richest.
You can do the same exercise with other hot productive places. Parts of the American South, Israel, Australia. The correlation between temperature and productivity falls apart the moment you look beyond Europe.
Which suggests the European pattern is really about European history, not European weather.
The north-south productivity gradient in Europe is a historical artifact of industrialization patterns, institutional development, and the particular way the European Union's economic architecture interacts with those differences.
To answer Daniel's question directly, is the warm climate, lower productivity correlation borne out by data, or is it just a few cherry-picked data points? It's cherry-picked. The correlation exists within Western Europe if you squint, but it vanishes globally. And even within Europe, the mechanism isn't climate, it's structure. And the hours worked data actively contradicts the laziness stereotype.
The Greeks work more. They produce less per hour. The gap is about what they're working with, not how hard they're working.
The German plant manager never looked at the clock data.
Say more.
1994. I was doing procurement for a German-Greek joint venture in Thessaloniki, industrial valves. The Germans designed the factory, shipped over the same CNC machines they used in Dusseldorf, and hired local workers at local wages. The output per worker was about 60% of the German plant. The German management kept saying it was a Mediterranean work ethic problem.
And the hours?
The Greek workers were averaging 50-hour weeks. The German plant was on 35. The manager didn't know because the time-tracking system had been set up at the German plant and nobody had configured it properly in Thessaloniki. He just looked at the output numbers and filled in the rest with what he already believed.
The workers were putting in more time, with the same machines, and getting blamed for lower output.
Same machines, different everything else. The supply chain was less reliable. Parts would show up late, and the machines would sit idle. The maintenance technicians had less experience with that specific equipment. The local suppliers for tooling and calibration weren't as developed. The German engineers had designed a factory that assumed a whole ecosystem, reliable logistics, experienced support, tight supplier networks, and when you dropped the same machines into a different ecosystem, you got different output.
This is exactly the capital versus ecosystem point. The machines are one form of capital. The supply chain, the skilled labor pool, the institutional knowledge, that's all capital too, just less visible.
The venture folded in 98. The German partner wrote a report blaming labor costs and productivity. The labor costs were a third of Germany's. The productivity per hour was lower, but the productivity per euro of wages was actually higher. They just couldn't see it because the framing was all wrong.
The framing was wrong because the stereotype did the thinking for them.
I still have the report somewhere. The section on workforce issues uses the phrase cultural attitudes toward punctuality 3 times. The section on supply chain delays, which cause most of the machine idle time, is 2 paragraphs.
That's the thing about structural explanations. They're harder to see than cultural ones. A shipping delay doesn't make a good story. A lazy southerner does.
The plant manager retired to a Greek island, incidentally. Seemed to find the pace acceptable once he wasn't trying to run a factory in it.
That's a detail that could keep a sociologist busy for a decade.
The valves were good, though. When the machines were running, the quality was identical to the German plant. The workers knew what they were doing. The problem was, the machines weren't running enough, and that had nothing to do with how hard anyone was working.
Why does the stereotype persist? We've got data, we've got case studies, we've got the hours work numbers that directly contradict the lazy southerner's story. And yet the story survives.
Cognitive ease. Warm weather makes people lazy is a simple, intuitive story. Historical path dependence, capital intensity differentials, institutional quality variation, and Eurozone currency regime effects create a productivity gap that's misattributed to cultural factors, isn't a sentence that fits in a headline.
The simple story also flatters the people telling it. If you're in a high productivity country, the structural explanation says you benefited from historical accidents and institutional inheritance. The cultural explanation says you earned it through virtue.
The policy implication of the simple story is basically those people need to change their culture, which is both impossible and insulting. The structural story says invest in capital, reform institutions, build supply chains. Those are hard, but they're actually doable.
One thing we haven't touched. As climate change shifts temperature bands northward, does any of this start to matter for Northern European productivity?
The early studies suggest modest effects. If German summers start looking more like Greek summers, you might see small productivity dips in outdoor work and non-air-conditioned environments. But we're talking a few percent, not a transformation. The capital stock doesn't evaporate because it got a few degrees warmer.
The real climate productivity story of the next few decades is probably about air conditioning and adaptation investment, not about workers suddenly becoming less diligent.
Right. And the places that can afford to adapt will adapt. The structural advantages compound. Wealthy countries can invest in the infrastructure to handle climate change, which preserves their productivity advantage. The gap isn't about the weather itself. It's about the resources to deal with the weather.
We end up exactly where we started, but with the explanation inverted. The productivity gap is real. The climate correlation is real within Europe. But the causal arrow doesn't run through effort or culture. It runs through capital, institutions, and history. And the workers who get stereotyped as lazy are, on average, working more hours than the workers doing the stereotyping.
That last point deserves to land. Greece works 543 more hours per year than Germany. 13.5 extra weeks. For less than half the hourly return. That's not a leisure preference. That's an economy that hasn't been equipped to convert effort into output at the same rate.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the Valve Factory story that I suspect is going to stick with me.
This has been my Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own questions, economic, historical, or otherwise, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My Weird Prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My Weird Prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.